Good morning. Welcome back. 8 minutes past the hour. Bill Meyer with Rebecca Maxwell, Paul Perreault, as we update you on what happened over the weekend. And, of course, the big debate last night, debate number two between Donald and Hillary. I think all of us over this weekend have been shocked and dismayed by those hot mic comments of Mr. Trump. And I guess the big question, Rebecca, given what we know about his past character, why should we be surprised?
Well, and that's kind of the case. I think people were repelled. It was unpleasant and uncomfortable for many of us. I think the question is how many of us should have been surprised. I don't know that we can answer that. But he said it. And it belongs in consideration with everything else in this horrible milieu of confusion and chaos that surrounds 2016. And I think that this was distasteful to many Americans, including many in the Republican leadership, and tossing around the notion that Donald Trump should drop out of the race entirely, which I think is something that's fairly unprecedented at this point in the race, at least in modern times. No political party that I can recall, and maybe I'm wrong and somebody else with more of a perspective can share that, but I don't think that's ever been seen before, where high-placed leaders in their own party's leadership would demand a presidential nominee drop out less than a month away.
Now, the closest thing I can think of was something that happened here in Minnesota back in the early 90s, where there was a Republican candidate for governor who there was a whole bunch of scandal around him, and he dropped out, and then Arne Carlson came in as the backup and actually ended up winning it, which was interesting enough. I mean, gee, why have these long, protracted races? Just go the last 2 weeks and boom.
So, well, I suppose. Yeah.
And yet, let's be honest, Mr. Trump, being very stubborn, says he's not going anywhere. And the Republican leadership, their options are limited, really, at this point. The whole thing is just, I think, so sad. And Rebecca, you and I were emailing over the weekend. One of the things as believers that we need to remember is our citizenship. We have a heavenly citizenship. We are ambassadors of our Heavenly Father here on earth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, regardless of what happens in elections, and yes, the whole thing that you said is very distasteful. We're very concerned about the future of this country. But we have an eternal hope. And if we lose sight of that, we are going to just really get discouraged and start despairing.
Well, and I think that is why some of this introspection specifically is very, very good. I think it's been maybe a little too easy over the last several years to kind of just go along with the flow in politics and let the culture determine our choices in the church in many, many ways, but especially politically, since we're just seeing it now. And there have been many even religious leaders in the church that have just kind of gone along with what the culture says, like you have to vote for the lesser of two evils, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what happens when that lesser is undefinable anymore? Mm-hmm. And at what point does it just become us valid dating evil? Like, and how do we handle this? Like, is there good that we can do out of this? So many people are reevaluating their decisions right now. And I think that's what's most important, really, because we are judged based on our motivations and on what we do. God is in charge of outcomes. We are not in charge of outcomes, but I think that it's good that there are so many leaders in the church that are taking a step back from just the political rat race part of this and looking at what our vote says at this moment in time, what it says to the culture, what it says about who, what we believe and where we place our trust. I think that's the most important statement that folks in the church can make right now.
I really didn't have much to add to that. I mean, to me, it's like she says
so
well. To me, it's okay. We have a responsibility as the church, as God's people, mm-hmm. to be that prophetic voice, the ambassador, the prophetic voice. And oftentimes, if we're compromising that prophetic voice, I mean, why listen to us? I mean, it just comes down to that.
I think we have a huge responsibility here and a huge opportunity here to be voices of truth and reconciliation, regardless of what happens here in a couple of weeks with the election. And as we were saying the other day, and I can't remember who the guest was that was saying, you know, we're going to have a lot of people. It was Gabe, I think, Gabe Lyons. We're going to have a lot of people really, really upset on election day. Half of America will be upset. And so what is our opportunity there moving forward as Christians? Okay, let's move off the Trump issue for a minute.
Yes, please.
let's talk about the other side of the political aisle. Hillary has some more stuff to deal with.
It was another one of those Friday document dumps, and it's just that constant drip. I mean, that's where the struggle is. I mean, people are looking at both of these candidates and going, how did we get this? But, yeah, the stuff came out with Hillary over the weekend. These were leaks from WikiLeaks, I think it was. And long story short, a lot of these had some of the text to those long-hidden transcripts of those speeches she gave to various Wall Street bank organizations and such. And the big thing that came out of it is, okay, it's pretty clear that Hillary has her public positions on various issues, and then she has her private position that she's willing to speak to her donors about.
Which could be very different. They are very different.
Yeah. They're almost directly opposite. So you kind of go, I mean, Hillary on paper has said she's shifted more towards some of the Bernie Sanders views on many issues of trade. That's not where she's saying, talking to the bankers, that's not where she is.
She's a very different position.
So it's more of that, again, drip, drip, drip.
Mm. Which is something that would always have been a problem, I think, with her base, because they kind of feel like she's with them in the moment in that speech when she has to be politically. But then there's this other side of her. And honestly, that's a problem that both of the candidates have right now. It's just that Trump is capturing all the media attention and scorn. But really, both candidates have almost very similar problems. It's kind of a weird mirror reflection in that way.
Credibility. That's the big issue right now. And I think all of us need to, again, be praying for this country. Okay, something else. This is in the news that I think all of us should be praying about and be concerned about. And that's what's happening in Iran right now. The Pentagon says that Iranian-backed Houthi rebels fired two missiles at a U.S. Navy destroyer early this morning off the coast of Yemen, and neither missile hit the ship. Thank the Lord for that. A defense official says the American warship was not struck but definitely targeted. And again, this is just escalating things in the Persian Gulf. The U.S. Navy sent warships to the area when a United Arab Emirates ship was destroyed off the coast of Yemen by those same rebels. Pentagon spokesman Jeff Davis says, "We assess the missiles were launched by the rebels in Yemen, and the United States remains committed to ensuring freedom of navigation everywhere in the world. We will continue to take all necessary steps to ensure the safety of our ships and our service members." So another hot spot in this world of ours. Every day it seems like we see more and more of these incidents, and just continue to pray for our military that they are not in harm's way. So that's a little update for you on what's happening right now in the news, and we'll keep you updated throughout the day. We'll have a chance to recap the debate, last night's debate, with our good friend Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College here in just about 15 minutes on Faith Radio.
It is 18 past the hour here at Faith Radio. That means it's time for Dr. Bill Meyer to respond to your email questions about marriage, parenting, and other family issues. Bill, we have one today from Greg, and he listens to Faith Radio on 104.7 FM in Madison. Greg writes, "Dear Dr. Bill, our daughter just turned 18 years old and is very mature for her age. She's always loved the Lord, and she had planned to attend a Christian college and wanted to continue using her gifts as a worship leader. That is, until she met her boyfriend Travis about 6 months ago. Now all she talks about is getting married. Travis does not have the same spiritual drive that our daughter showed, and I'm afraid she's sinking down to his level. She's given up all of her previous dreams and has even begun using birth control pills. Can you give my wife and I some wisdom on how to handle the situation without creating a wedge between us and our daughter?"
Wow, man, that is a heavy one. And Greg, first of all, as a dad, I feel for you, and you are right to tread cautiously here. Obviously, you love your daughter very much. You want the best for her. I'm sure you and your wife are very disappointed, and you're very frustrated with this turn of events. But you want to avoid doing anything that could permanently damage your relationship with your daughter. I would suggest you and your wife sit down with her, discuss this situation openly and honestly. Let her know that while you understand she has strong feelings for this boyfriend, Travis, you're disappointed that she seems to have given up on all of her dreams. And I think it's also very critical right now that you express your feelings about premarital sex. But try not to do it with a spirit of condemnation. Remember, the Bible tells us it's God's kindness that leads us to repentance, not his wrath. So you don't want to come down on her like a ton of bricks here, but you want to just let her know that you believe sexuality is a wonderful gift from God, but it's designed to be expressed in marriage. And it's also, I think, very important to communicate to her that, you know, sexual involvement in a dating relationship tends to cloud a person's judgment. And it makes it difficult to view the relationship and the future clearly. I've mentioned this before on this program. Couples who live together, couples who cohabit before marriage, have a 60 to 80% higher divorce rate than couples who don't. And unfortunately, that message is not really getting across in the church. But Christian young people who are living together have no idea they are really torpedoing their chances for marital success. I would tell your daughter that you would like her to consider abstaining from sex until marriage and to really take her time getting to know Travis before getting engaged. Now, you don't want to speak negatively about this young man because that is definitely going to drive a wedge between you, the last thing you want. Instead, help her to understand that marriage is a lifelong commitment, that it should never be rushed into before you truly know the other person. I personally believe it's wise for couples to date for at least a year before getting engaged. And some people say, I can't believe you'd say a year, 52 weeks. Come on, the four seasons of life. That seems pretty reasonable, especially because we know in the first 3 to 6 months of a relationship, you know, our endorphins and our brain chemistry is going nuts and we have a hard time seeing things realistically. If your daughter is determined to get married, and if she refuses to discuss the issue with you, here's what I would say. I would say, you know what, honey? We look forward to attending the wedding, but we're not going to be paying for it. She should also understand that if she chooses to get married now, you're not going to be paying for any college. You're not going to be paying for living expenses. If she and Travis feel that they are grown up enough to get married, they're going to need to take on grown-up responsibilities like rent and food and car payments and insurance. And there's a lot of grown-up responsibilities they're going to have to be concerned about. And also, when you deliver this message, deliver it with love, not with anger. Tell your daughter you love her very much. You want the best for her in life. Let her know that if she chooses to get married to Travis, you're going to do everything you can to support them emotionally and spiritually, but not financially. And finally, let me recommend a great book that you can purchase and read with your daughter if she's open to it. And hopefully she and her boyfriend will read it. It's called Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts by two of my friends, Drs. Les and Leslie Parrott. So thanks for writing, Greg, and thank you so much for listening to Faith Radio in Madison.
Yes, we're glad you're listening, Greg. And if you have a family-related question for Dr. Bill, why don't you write to him? You can do so at drbill@myfaithradio.com.
Love to hear from you. It's 23 past the hour, Faith Radio. Do you want to stay sharp well into old age? Then never stop learning. That's the new takeaway from a study that suggests a lifetime of giving your brain new information can delay the onset of dementia by up to 9 years. So, Rebecca, make sure you pay attention to this.
I'm learning already.
Good, good. All right. It's it's believed for some time now that staying mentally active helps keep dementia and Alzheimer's at bay. But now we have this new concrete evidence. Thanks to research at the Mayo Clinic, the Mayo folks studied, they looked at 2,000 people, older people between the ages of 70 and 90. And they looked at their current mental functioning. Then they went back and they looked at their histories. They looked at their level of education, how complex their occupation was, their previous mental activities, both during midlife and more recently. And some of the things they looked at, their cognitive activities, these people playing music, reading books, working on computers, arts and crafts, even socializing regularly. So they collected all this info. And then they put all these older people through a series of tests to figure out their cognitive functioning. As a result, the researchers were able to show that mental stimulation throughout one's life can actually delay the onset of dementia and Alzheimer's. The study author Prashantiva Murray at Mayo Clinic says, doing cognitive activities at least three times a week is highly protective for our brains. Mentally stimulating activities during midlife has a particularly strong effect on people who didn't have a lot of education. Isn't that interesting? So people that maybe only had a high school education but are spending time trying to enrich themselves and their minds in midlife are much less likely to come down with dementia and Alzheimer's, at least early. Being educated, having a higher education also had a protective factor. That seems to stave off dementia for at least 5 years. But Dr. DeMurray points out, even if you didn't have a formal education, intellectual activity later in life can really, really help. So, Rebecca, get out those crossword puzzles.
All right. I'm working on it. Right now. It's not, no time like the present,
right? No time
right?
like the present. That's right. Okay. So there's some great news for all of us who maybe are getting a little bit older. Keep your brain active.